Krishna, can you stop sharing, please?
Yeah, I'll do this.
Yeah, unmute your microphone.
Yeah. Sangeeta. Yeah. Krishna, can you stop sharing the PowerPoint, please?
You cannot mute your microphone yourself?
No, I can't. I can't see the functions. They have disappeared because of the PowerPoint.
Oh, you want me to unmute you? Okay. No, you're already unmuted.
No, mute me and stop sharing the power.
Okay.
Good morning, everyone. Distinguished representatives of the REDS, distinguished representatives from member states, from private sector, academia, research institutions, my brothers and sisters across the continent, our two valuable resource persons, Dr. Sunita and Dr. Zainab, colleagues at the Department of Infrastructure and Energy or Protocol Observe. This is a very important meeting that is happening at a crucial time, not just for Africa, but for the world. It is a pleasure and that we are having this discussion really at the critical role of women in the Africa energy sector. Because, I mean, as you know, it is recognized as a crucial and critical sector for Africa's development, especially under COVID-19. This pandemic, among other things, has revealed the seriousness of the energy sector in Africa beyond even electrification for individuals, when we know that only 28% of health facilities in sub-Saharan Africa have reliable sources of energy. This is an extremely alarming situation. This is also added to more than 600 million Africans who do not have access to electricity, and almost 900 million people especially rely on firewood and charcoal for cooking, so they do not have access to clean cooking, and this particularly harms and causes lots of injuries and deaths among women, not to mention the hardship they face due to that. Now, this the circumstances where we are and the global pandemic has also other consequences for women's education, for women's businesses. We all know that women are mainly concentrated in the informal sector, lots of them in small and medium enterprises. These have all been suffering, if not stopping, and forced to shut down. Unemployment is soaring among women due to that, and many girls, remember, at the origin of our empowerment is education in STEM. Many girls now face the fate of being pulled out of education to care for the household or the sick or due to the pandemic. So the repercussions of COVID-19 go beyond an already difficult situation that women were facing, not to mention the constraints that women are facing in the infrastructure sector at large and specifically in energy. Now, there are some glimpses of hope, and there are things that we can do, and that is where this meeting is very valuable, because we are embarking into the second phase of the program for infrastructure development. And infrastructure is, by nature, a big employer. So we want to make sure that it employs lots of women, qualified and skilled women, which says something about the skills that we should provide, but also about the education of women, as I said, in the field, in the related fields. It also implies that women entrepreneurs be part of the value chain, and to ensure that a procurement makes sure that women-led enterprises are also part of the procurement chains. There is also the issue of finance. And finance, as you know, often when we talk about women, as if women are destined only to microfinance. No, women need finance and need projects as well, especially the ones in energy. So we need to look across the value chain and see how can we make our PIDA program, especially the ones in energy, serve as an accelerator, as an enhancer of women's empowerment and to help the continent recover better and faster. Last but not least, digitalization is offering new horizons for women empowerment. So instead of selling maybe in a market, to sell through an e-commerce platform, instead of going to school to learn through a tablet. But these all require still energy to function. So we want to make sure that not only they have the skills, but they have, as I said, the prerequisite, which is energy. So with that, I would like to congratulate you for, I know the work that has been done. And I look forward to your deliberations, ensuring that, as I said, we look into the whole spectrum and the whole value chain to ensure women are empowered and that PIDA program and our efforts serve the continent at this very critical time in its history, and I thank you.
Thank you, Excellency Commissioner. So we hand it over to you, Sunita, or Zainab, maybe Sunita, yeah? You're muted, Sunita. Okay, let me unmute you. Sunita, you need to unmute, please. I can't unmute you from here.
You are still muted.
So yeah, sweet. Yeah. We cannot. Oh la la! I am host, but I can't unmute. I don't know why this doesn't work. Okay, I'll make you host. Yeah, you should be able to unmute. You are now host, Sunita.
Yes, thank you. Now. Thank you. Sorry about the complications, everyone. I can now begin. Just wanted to thank again, Madam Commissioner, for these very, very important words. Indeed, this is a very important time in the history of Africa. We have, as you mentioned, made a lot of progress, but still much more remains to be done. So with this few words, and thank you, Madam Commissioner, for our opening remarks, let me start. My name is Sunita. I'll start this presentation on behalf of the African Network for Women in Infrastructure. The steering committee members who are represented on this webinar today as well. And they will have an opportunity also to contribute as we go along the presentation. We wanted to share today some of the ideas that have been developed under the Program for Infrastructure in the Program for Infrastructure in Development in Africa, which is the abbreviation PIDA, to show how we can support gender mainstreaming in infrastructure development all over Africa. As all of you know, PIDA is an important program for all our member states, as well as the RECs, and it aims to establish a continental network of infrastructure to support trade and growth, peace and stability. So before I go into my presentation, I wanted to share this one interesting fact. There are many facts out there, but I thought I would just share this one slide. I found this recently in one of the the platforms related to entrepreneurship and inventions. So it was interesting to see for me here that Togo is leading in the highest number of female inventors since 1998 to 2017. It is even, it has the highest number of female inventors, registered patents. These are registered patents, even more than the United States and the UK, as we can see on this chart. So I think this was very important because it shows the potential that we will have in Africa when we try to address gender issues. Another interesting fact I wanted to share with you is that the bulletproof vests that we see our police force and our army using has been actually created from a fiber created, invented by a woman. So this is really just to show the potential that we have in Africa and across the world if we are able to include women equally in the different economic activities. The reason we are here today is we wanted to show from the perspective of the African Union, the AUDA NEPAD, and PIDA partners, the methodologies and the way we are going to be going forward addressing gender in infrastructure. First of all, it is important to also explain that it is not something that has been created without a proper agenda. We know that in Agenda 2063 of the African Union, gender and women's participation has been prioritized in many different places, but the most important areas where gender and women's economic participation has been mentioned is under Aspiration 1, Aspiration 2, and Aspiration 6. We also know that this has been taken forward in the African Union Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment Strategy, which was in fact launched very recently. And this is not only related to infrastructure, but the idea that we need to address gender in everything that we do in Africa to ensure equal and sustainable growth. This is, of course, at the global level, also contributing to the SDGs, as we know, not only SDG 5, but all the SDGs, because without the participation of women, we cannot reduce poverty, we cannot increase equal access to education, and some of the indicators. We then see that the African Union, AUDA, NEPAD, and the PIDA partners taking their initiative from the Agenda 2063 have now prioritized gender in the infrastructure sector, and they have done this in April 2019 in Egypt, where the STC, members of the STC have declared this a priority and reconfirmed this in November 2019 with the launching of the African Network for Women in Infrastructure. And this now starts the process for the African Union and AUDA NEPAD to support member states and RECs in prioritizing gender issues in infrastructure. While we were discussing this important issue, many member states and many RECs have also asked us to clarify why is it important to address gender issues in infrastructure? And the answer is very simple. The infrastructure development or infrastructure per se is not gender blind. The way women and men use infrastructure as participants is different because depending on the kind of infrastructure, as Madam Commissioner said, whether it's energy or roads or transport or railways, the needs are different. And the way when men and women participate is different. So it is important for us to address these differences as we go along. There are other areas that we also need to consider. What are the risks of violence against women? What are the discriminatory social norms and practices that our infrastructure may promote or can mitigate? What are the entry points for economic empowerment? So these are issues which are important, and therefore infrastructure development is not gender neutral and needs to consider the differences between men and women. We also wanted to share with you that there are opportunities and challenges to addressing gender issues in infrastructure. First of all, the positives, the opportunities. We know that 92% of the SDGs depend on achieving having better infrastructure. So whether it is schools or education or health or poverty or climate change, all of it needs infrastructure. So there's a huge opportunity for us to contribute to gender mainstreaming across the SDGs by looking at infrastructure. We also know that in Africa, 25 million new entrants will be joining the workforce over the next 1 to 2 years. This means, again, a huge opportunity for our young girls and boys to address gender issues, to lead on gender equal participation in the workforce. We also know that Africa's consumer spending will increase by $2.2 trillion by 2030. And this is just growing because of the growing urbanization, improved health and education in some countries, in some regions. This will increase our consumer spending, and women make up half of this consumer spending, both as users and as entrepreneurs. So here's another opportunity we need to think about. Last but not least, we have now the opportunity from our continental organizations and our PIDA partners who have stressed the importance of gender and prioritized impact too. So this is really an opportunity, the time that we must leverage on this opportunity. Very quickly, some of the challenges: infrastructure investment gap in Africa remains very high, as you can see, and we need to quickly try to not only address investment in terms of financing, but making it sustainable through addressing gender issues. We also know that there are certain challenges related to skills and food security and conflict. So how do we develop sustainable infrastructure which is inclusive and addresses gender issues? So we need to think about those things. We also know that in some of our countries, there is insufficient capacity in the public and the private sector to address gender issues. So looking at this challenge, we can also think about building some of the opportunities into capacity building. Last but not least, while we're thinking about integrating women's participation, we still have to think about sustainability, making sure that it's not a one-off approach. So these are some of the challenges that we are looking at. I also thought it was important to share with you what are the risks. I mean, it is important that gender is not something we are doing because it looks good, but there are real risks if our infrastructure development remains gender blind. First of all, a missed opportunity is that women's equal economic participation can really increase Africa's gross domestic product, as you can see, by almost $316 billion by 2025. This is a very important trajectory of economic growth that we all need. We also know that if we increase access to digitalization for women in Africa, we can increase our GDP by $14 billion just by doing one thing. We also know that almost 70% of the cross-border trading happens by women in the informal sector, as the commissioner pointed out. Last but not least, we know that as we grow along in the infrastructure development in Africa, we will need more engineers, more skilled practitioners in the construction, in the infrastructure, in the sciences. But today, women represent only 7 to 12% of engineering students in Africa. So really, there's a big gap that we need to look at. For example, only 10% of female engineers in South Africa and 8% in Kenya actually joined the workforce after graduation. So this is still needs some work and attention from all of us together. Changing perceptions. Clearly, some of us, we also continue to face this in our daily life. Why do we need to talk about women? Why do we need to talk about gender? So these are important areas of perceptions we need to change. Of course, there are also risks that we need to proactively address. Gender-based violence remains a priority that we need to address, and infrastructure sector by nature creates those risks. And of course, the poor and long-term sustainability of operations and maintenance of our infrastructure needs to be looked at. I thought I'd share these three examples. I know that there are many, many advantages of having a gender responsive infrastructure, infrastructure which is designed with a proper gender entry point. But I thought I'd just share these three examples because I think that they speak for themselves. And I especially like the one that is on the right, Kenya Last Mile Connectivity. And this shows that the project, when it looked at how gender issues, how women's participation, how women-headed households would be affected by this project, the Last Mile Connectivity project, it managed to change its design, which led not only to a reduced cost of connectivity per household, but also increased the number of households connected. So this is clearly a very important example, and there are many, many such examples that we can share, but we need to make them count. So we need to bring in gender issues more sustainably, more proactively. The one on the solar markets, clearly also in Benin, we can see has shown benefits. So let me move on quickly in the interest of time, but we can come back to some of these examples during the Q&A. In the response, in the way we were thinking, how do we bring gender into infrastructure development, we thought a starting point was to provide some guidelines to all the teams in the ministries, in the agencies, and the public sector, even at the private sector, even at the financiers level, bring some guidelines that would help practitioners at the starting point to know how to identify gender issues in these projects. First of all, it was necessary to identify what these GRID guidelines, the Gender Responsive Infrastructure Development Guidelines, short form GRID guidelines, would do. They will hopefully support member states and RECs to assure that there are gender responsive planning, to make sure that gender is addressed throughout the project cycle, and that the investment is sustainable with a number of potential impact and benefits which have been already identified. We then tried to see how we can bring in gender issues throughout the PIDA project cycle. So some of you are already familiar with the PIDA project cycle, which is starting from the left-hand side, which is the enabling environment and needs assessment, all the way through to operations and maintenance. But it is going from S0 to S4C that we find it important that we have to address gender issues. There are different steps, and we have to build entry points for gender into the project design, into the implementation at different stages. We wanted to show this diagram and then go into the details as we progress, but it is important to understand that there are entry points throughout the project cycle. It doesn't happen at one point. We don't look at gender at one point and then forget about it and walk away. It has to be a continuous process. It has to be monitored, and we have to know what we have identified for the project to do in able to follow the outputs and the outcomes. So I will now go into the details, but happy to come back to this this diagram, which actually summarizes the entire process throughout the project cycle. The The first starting point that I'd also like to make clear, and this is because we've had many questions on who is supposed to use these grid guidelines. So we think that these guidelines will be very important to the PIDA coordinators. Some of you are the PIDA coordinators in member states and RECs. Very important is the role of the Ministry of Gender, Ministry of Women in member states, who should also be part of the infrastructure planning from a gender perspective, and other experts in line ministries, consultants who work on feasibility studies, environmental social assessments, so on and so forth. So these guidelines are focused to all stakeholders who will be involved in infrastructure design and implementation. So the first step that we think will be very important is to carry out a gender analysis. And this starts very early on. And this is very important because at this point, we will be trying to identify what are the challenges, what are the gender-specific challenges, what are the challenges specific to women's participation in that particular infrastructure. Because here we're now specifying the particular infrastructure, whether it's a road or a railway or a transport or a port or an airport, any kind of infrastructure, we need to have a very specific gender analysis based on that particular investment. And therefore, there is a need for a gender analysis, which will look at many aspects relevant to that investment, but starting from the national laws, if there are any particular processes, whether regional, sub-regional, even national level laws which may affect women's participation, or which can actually be addressed by this project, such as getting more women into certain skills, certain jobs. So some of those laws which may actually need to be looked at will have to be reviewed at this stage. We also think that the gender analysis can help to assess what are the policies, national, regional, sub-regional policies, which may help either the gender responsive infrastructure design or actually hinder. So we have to review the national laws, we have to look at the policies, and this starts at the national level. This starts with you, who are actually going to be in charge of designing the project, or whom you know who are going to be in charge of designing the projects. We also think that this would be important to have as a gender analysis within the institutions, because we know sometimes, depending on the infrastructure, it is not one institution, it is not one ministry or one agency that is responsible for the infrastructure design. There are many different agencies, but there will be one lead agency, one lead ministry, one lead office. So we need to also understand who are these institutions, who are these bodies responsible for the infrastructure design, and how do they see gender issues, how can they support gender equality and effectiveness in the infrastructure design. Through this gender analysis, we also want to identify existing gaps. For example, we talked about capacity in the beginning. Do we understand that, for example, do all the ministries have gender experts? Do all the contractors have gender experts? Will they need training? If the ministry does not have a gender training, we can support them by having a gender training to raise awareness, to sensitize the experts, but also bring specific indicators for the ministry to contribute to. So this will be very important, identifying the gaps within the institutions, within the policies, within the laws that can help, that can be addressed through the infrastructure. design. Last but not least, gender balance in the stakeholder groups. I think this is, some of you may have already been part of stakeholder engagement, but it's going to be an important action during gender analysis that in the project site, we carry out stakeholder engagement. We identify who are the stakeholders, if it's women, it's communities, it's youth, and other groups. How will they be affected? What kind of different needs? How can we bring these different needs to be prioritized in the infrastructure investment itself? So a very important part starts very early in the project identification stage, even when it is being first considered that the project should be designed. So gender analysis in the guidelines that we have developed, there are terms of references for consultants to focus on this. There are much more detailed indicators that a gender analysis might investigate, might explore. So this is just a very quick snapshot of what a gender analysis should look like, but the actual document gives much more details on how this can be done. Let me also explain that some of you may have heard that the PDAPAP 2 has been developed with a very important and innovative approach, which is the integrated corridor approach. And this has been done over the last year. It is not something that happened overnight. It has taken a long time, a very consultative process. The integrated corridor approach is a screening criteria or provides the first screening criteria for member states and for RECs to identify which of the projects go forward to be considered as PDA projects, and then finally for the decision-making bodies. And some of you may remember who have been part of the PDAPAP 1 that this is an important innovation in PDAPAP 2 because this helps us also to bring very quickly those projects which are ready for consideration by decision makers. So the screening criteria in this integrated corridor approach has been established, has also been considered by the member states. One of the six screening criteria of this integrated corridor approach is on gender. And let me tell you, this is a breakthrough because all the member states have really applauded and welcomed this criteria to identify projects which already have considered gender, even at the design stage, even at the very early stages. Now, what are these criteria? What are these screening criteria that you need to know? There are five, and this list tells you what they are. And each of the criteria, these are five actions that have been proposed under the gender responsive criteria in this integrated corridor approach. So your project should meet at least one, if not more, and we encourage more than one action to be met, but at least one so that you can have the project to be scored along the number of actions, gender responsive actions that the project commits to address. So for example, I have a road project. The road project is going to build a road between a highway between point A and point B. And my initial design, in my initial discussions with stakeholders, with the national agencies, I would suggest that, okay, I think this project is so important that we can actually promote women's participation. And I think we should actually try to see how we can bring in at least three procurement-related actions within the project design that can help women's participation in the infrastructure value chain. So that would be the action number three, where I'm proposing three procurement-related actions to be designed within the infrastructure project at the procurement stage. And I'll show you how what we mean by that just now. But this is how you would say that, okay, here's what project commits to do as a national agency, as a REC, here's what we will try to do when the project is finalized. So this is how, and if you do that, if you commit to having the project to meet these three procurement actions, your project will then be scored alongside the other five criteria by the decision makers to see how ready it is to go forward. And I will not go into all the details of this screening criteria, because that needs a completely different discussion, because there are other criteria as well. But I think it's important to know that this will be required. This is not something that you can decide to do or not do, but it will be required that every project show what is the gender responsive action proposed at that stage. Very quickly, this gender responsive screening criteria, we, as I mentioned, that it will be needed. It is something that you have to say. You are either doing it, which, how many actions do you commit, does the project commit to do? And you don't have to choose all of them. You can say, I want to do one action, two action, but it is something that will be necessary because there is a scoring and weighting of the project that happens because of this commitment. Some examples of what kind of actions you can consider. I can commit that I want to have, I will build in this project capacity building for the contractors, so they realize that women's participation in the construction site or in the subcontracting will be important. I can train women business owners who are around the project site so that we can build entrepreneurship. We can build in gender responsive criteria in the bidding documents. We can say if a contractor demonstrates that he or she has experience in bringing in female employees, that could be one of the criteria in the bidding documents. Okay, then also we can establish standards for bidders, that this could be actually a requirement going forward. So there are many, many actions. These are just examples of a few that we thought to share with you, because I'm sure you're wondering what does that mean? What kind of actions should be considered? But here are some examples, but you can even have experience. In some countries, we know they have gone even more than beyond these five or six actions that we have brought here as examples. So that is really where we start with the project identification, gender analysis, bringing in gender gaps, identifying the gender gaps in the initial stages, trying to provide recommendations on where the gaps are and what the project needs to do to meet these gaps or to address these gaps. Then we come to the second big set of activities around the project design and implementation. So once we know where the gender-specific gaps are, whether in related directly to the design of the infrastructure, related to the operation and implementation, whether related to the environment, meaning whether we're creating new jobs in or opportunities for women around the infrastructure. Once we have identified this, we now bring those aspects into the design and we say, okay, here's what I know is a gap and here's how I'm going to commit in this project that this will address those particular gaps. And I want to remind you that this was one of the examples of the one that you saw in a few slides ago, the Kenya last mile connectivity, where we actually managed to change the design, not myself, but the project analysts managed to change the design based on the information they had from the gender analysis. So very quickly at the project design stage, we have to now bring in all the gaps, all the recommendations to actually become part of the project. And this is important because it's not just saying that, yes, the project will create a new training or we will give capacity building. We actually even have to cost it. We make sure that the project has a cost, has been budgeted. All these actions and activities have been budgeted in the project financing, because without a budget, we cannot implement these actions, and that the project implementation unit is responsible, because as some of you already know, it could be in the best project documents, it could be having the best budget, but if the project implementation unit, if the line ministry does not make sure to follow and make sure that it commits to implementing these, then it remains just actions on the paper. And it has happened, I mean, in many infrastructure projects, which also have a very long-term duration. The last slide that I have before I hand over to my colleague Zainab is the issue of monitoring and evaluation. And clearly, once we design these gender responsive actions, we actually want to monitor and evaluate the progress towards meeting these gender responsive features of the project. So the starting point, and this actually starts even at the gender analysis stage, is to ensure that we have a methodology or a mechanism to collect sex disaggregated data on the project site in that particular sector. And I know this is a problem for us in Africa, because in most countries, we don't have nationwide sex disaggregated data collection. We may have by sector, depending on communities, depending on projects. So really, this is an important area that we need to focus on, not only on this project, but going forward as a ministry, as an agency, in that sector, whether it's agriculture, energy, water supply and sanitation, ICT, we need to continue to build this data, because there's no way we can monitor progress if we don't know where we are at this point. We then also want to make sure in the project that we have established realistic targets. That means that, okay, we have identified the gaps, but we are also going to set targets for the project to achieve. How many capacity building, how many contractors who will be gender aware, how many women to be employed. I mean, these are targets that we can define for the project to achieve based on the gaps that we have identified for our project. And also, we have to make sure that we are basing our targets on clear assumptions. That means they are not just taking it because they look good, but they're based on realistic assumptions, and they actually target the right vulnerable people or the right target groups that are important for the meeting these or reducing these gaps. Very important, the project results matrix, log frame, that's where everything starts on monitoring and evaluation. We have to make sure that the project objectives include language which has gender sensitive language in it, which has clear indicators for inputs for those specific gender actions, clear indicators for outputs, and what is expected in terms of outcomes. For gender responsive economic growth, local growth, and infrastructure implementation. So it's very important. It doesn't just happen because we've mentioned it in the content. We have to mention it in the log frame, and this is what is monitored every 6 months, 1 year, or every year on the project progress report, whether it is internally to the ministry or to the financiers. We look at the log frame most of the time to know where the progress has been. And last but not least, of course, we have to make sure that the project objectives and the components that we have identified for actions in the project itself are aligned, so that we don't just say, okay, yes, the project will be gender responsive as an objective, and then we don't identify any activities or components to address these gender issues. So really, there has to be a linkage throughout the project. There has to be a linkage throughout from the project identification stage at the project analysis and throughout to implementation, monitoring, and evaluation, and of course, operation. And there is, of course, as all project cycles, we have to continue to monitor and report and learn from where the gaps are and feed them back into the project design, project implementation as the project is already ongoing. So these are the three main areas within that project cycle that we had shown earlier. And let me go back to just bring that slide so that we can remind ourselves before handing over to my colleague. So you will see here that we have spoken throughout the different stages of the project cycle. This is the PIDA project cycle. So this is specific to PIDA, and this is required project cycle. And these are the entry points where we can show that gender issues have been identified, proper actions have been designed, proper procurement actions as required by the integrated corridor approach have been considered and designed. There is a monitoring and evaluation framework, there is a reporting framework, and that there are lessons learned that can be fed back into the project implementation unit to learn and make sure that we are on track. So this is where my section on the gender responsive infrastructure development guidelines ends. And I'd like to hand over to my colleague, Dr. Zainab, who will speak on the policies and the gender responsive policies in the infrastructure sector. Thank you.
Thank you, Sunita. So Zainab, over to you. I'm sharing my screen. Please let me know when you want to switch slides. Thank you.
Okay, can we switch slides now? Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, so I'm going to be addressing the area of policy and policy engagement. Sunita addressed the issue of guidelines in the actual and how to integrate gender issues into the actual steps of the project cycle. So I'm addressing the area of policy engagement. And in this regard, we had worked on a policy brief surrounding the area of women and sustainable infrastructure. And I start with the commitment that the PIDA steering committee members have made. They are committed to the area of policy harmonization in general, and we would like for that commitment to extend to the area of gender issues within the infrastructure sector. So in this regard, this policy brief has two main objectives. First, to identify what are the key policy constraints within the infrastructure institutional architecture and enabling environment that actually constrain and put a brake on women's participation as users and contributors to the infrastructure lifecycle in Africa. And once we have identified those policy constraints, what we have done is to present certain priority policy actions for the consideration of the PIDA steering committee, to be further recommended for discussion and consideration by member states, by RECs, and other relevant stakeholders in the policy realm under the PAP2. Like the guidelines, the policy brief also has specific target groups that we to whom we are addressing these recommendations, and they are mainly within the member states, those in charge of policy design and decision making, the RECs, the PETA steering committee members, and other stakeholders, including civil society, the private sector, academia, research institutions, and think tanks. Now, for the sake of time, I'm not going to go into the constraints as such. I'm going to focus more on the priorities that we think are important and we think are necessary, actually, in order for those gender-responsive guidelines that Sunita spoke about earlier to be implemented. And these are generally seven, and I will go through them very quickly. I think we need to leave enough time for Q&A. So the first one is that is the necessity to promote the implementation of national, regional, and continental policy, legal, and regulatory frameworks that allow gender-responsive infrastructure to take place and to be implemented. This will also necessitate that infrastructure needs to provide for the differing needs of both women and men. I mean, there's a tendency that of seeing gender infrastructure as being gender neutral, as Sunita addressed that earlier, and what are some of the negative consequences of that. So I think a starting point for, in terms of policy priorities, is to provide for these different needs of both women and men. Now, since a lot of these decisions relating to policy are made by certain decision makers and practitioners within mainly government, but also in other organizations and institutions responsible for infrastructure, that for them, gender is not an automatic reflex, and the default situation is one of being gender blind. So we feel that in order for this to occur, it is necessary to build the capacity of decision makers and practitioners themselves to ensure gender sensitivity and responsiveness. We also feel that another important priority, this is policy priority number four, and again, Sunita alluded to it earlier, is the importance of putting in place systems that allow the systematic collection and analysis of gender disaggregated data in order to build evidence and context on the gender infrastructure needs at national, regional, and local levels. In order for this to occur, the importance of the policy priorities, the importance of building the capacity of those responsible for developing policies and policy priorities in order for the differentiated needs of men and women to be taken into account, and in order for gender disaggregated data to be gathered, it is important that these policy objectives are properly financed and resourced. Now, there are many ways of doing this. One strategy that is frequently used is, of course, gender budgeting. But the idea is that there's no point in saying that we have this policy if that policy's implementation is not properly financed and resourced. Also, and again, this was included early in the earlier discussion, the importance of promoting gender-responsive procurement processes by increasing women's participation and the participation of women-owned businesses in the supply and value chain. This means that there have to be supporting policies, both in public and private procurement processes that allow for this to happen. So in order for the eventual full implementation of the INCORA criteria that Sunita alluded to earlier, eventually there will have to be changes in the policies of public and private procurement that will allow for this kind of gender sensitivity and especially sensitivity to increasing women's participation in the supply and value chains at the national, regional, and continental levels. Finally, the last policy priority I will talk about is the importance of, and I think this was also mentioned earlier by Madam Commissioner, the importance of women's employment at the different levels of the infrastructure sector. What we have tried to indicate and prove is that this starts from the very bottom, if I say, the importance of infrastructure-relevant education and capacity building. Again, as alluded to earlier, the importance of increasing the numbers of women in STEM and all those infrastructure-relevant education sectors and general capacity building in the area, going all the way to having gender-sensitive employment policies so that the employment policies, so that we have then a cohort of women going into the area of infrastructure at different levels, whether at the level of workers, but also going all the way up to managers. And for that, there is this need for both infrastructure relevant education and capacity building, but also gender sensitive employment policies. I'll stop here. And if there are any other questions, I think, I mean, probably a lot of the things that might not have been mentioned or were not as clear could be mentioned in the Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Zainab. I would like to remind you that we will post the presentation on the PDAPAP2 website, and also the recording of the session will be available for those who probably missed part of it or couldn't attend. So now I think that we will move to the question and answer session. I think there are two ways. Either you can raise your hand, which is if you click on participants, you will see at the bottom right corner there's the raise hand button, or you can type the question in the chat box. There are colleagues, Duha, Anwin coordinator, is with us. She can assist to filter the questions. I think there's we have Manuel and Sarah, I think, who are connected, who will probably intervene on the policy brief also. So Duha, maybe I'll let you later introduce Manuel and Sarah so that they can intervene. But in the meantime, we see that I need to check the chat to see if there are any questions. And if you want to intervene, or the director has raised hands. So maybe over to you, director. Can we hear from you? Thank you.
Thank you, Krishna. Thank you, Zainab and Sunita, for this very impressive presentation and with the full outline on specifically on the process, but also the expectation in the future. I'm very pleased. I'm very pleased to see that you link it with the PDAPAP2 process and also specifically when it comes to the implementation, the preparation of project and so on. And this brings me to ask you, and maybe also to see from our audience, specifically the members of the network, how you see the gender sensitivity taking consideration when it comes to the implementation, having in mind that we unfortunately, even now in the term of selection of projects, and despite the fact that we dedicated specific criteria to really to underscore this gender sensitivity, we didn't see really a very huge enthusiasm from member states and from regional economic communities while they are presenting the project. If you look at the detail of submitted project, you will not find a lot of information about how this project will really impact the gender sensitivity as a whole. This is my first question. And the second point, I would like also in your future presentation, you also try to link the gender sensitivity with the implementation, because you, as you know, the African Union Commission will adopt a list, but this list will be handed over to to outline a path for the implementation. And I think this is also very important, really, to see from the process point of view how AudaNEPAD will work later on with Anwin, and in which platform we can really already start to prepare this for post, let's say, adoption of the list of project of PDAPAP2. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Director. We have a question from Mary, but before that, I think I would like to also inform you that we have among ourselves, I'm connected today, we have some of the members, the founding members of Anwin, including, I think, MFON is there. I don't see, do you see, are there any members from Anwin apart from Madame MFON?
Yes, Krishna, yeah. This is Sunita. I think almost all of the colleagues from Anwin are there. They can be given the floor to speak.
Good. So they will be, yeah. Imoni, I can see. Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Good. So we will have the opportunity to listen to the Anwin members. So maybe can we listen? Director, your hand is still raised. Is that a new hand? No, okay. So maybe let's listen to Mary, and then MFON has raised hands also. Go over to you, Mary. Mary Cheik. Okay, yeah, sorry. I didn't see the middle name. Okay. Anwin founder member. Okay, over to you, Mary.
Okay, thank you so much, Krishna. Actually, it wasn't a question. It was just when the director was just making a comment about the need to just provide a bit more specificity, especially around the issue of gender sensitivity and how this can actually be applied. For me, what comes to mind is something, if I take the Kenyan example, earlier this year, for instance, we had one of our judges, a lady, of course, who issued, a ruling where she obliged the Kenya National Highway to ensure that there were ablutional facilities along our corridors, transport corridors. And then, of course, requiring the Ministry of Transport to ensure that we have, our national transport policy aligned to this particular requirement, because it's a constitutional requirement, under Article 69, not necessarily for toilets and ablutional facilities, but just general obligation. So if we were to take that and consider the fact that Kenha is responsible for some of the transport corridors that form part of the East African corridors, the Northern Corridor, Central Corridor, all of this, some of the things that we'd be looking at is along that 14,000 kilometers of road network, we'd probably be looking at 150 to 300 kilometer stretches where you'd have to have ablution facilities, for instance. That's about 50 to 100 of these facilities. And these facilities are not to be looked at in isolation. You'd be looking at the opportunities that they would present along every 150 to 300 kilometers. That is gas stations, restaurants, motels, mini markets, and all of that stuff. So, when of course now the employment opportunities even along those corridors, when you're looking at facilities management for these particular facilities. So this completely then transforms the way women would travel along this corridor. So not just as users of the of the transport, the buses or whatever it is, but also users of those facilities. And in terms of, say, collecting data and determining how many of these pit stops would be required per this 14,000 kilometers of road network within the region, you'd be looking at maybe how many women actually travel along this corridors, how many of them are traveling with children, and it's, for me, just that one single ruling has an impact to completely force the region to redesign its roads and the highway authorities to redesign how they basically implement the roads. And that very small thing, would really have a great impact, on our roads. So that really can give you a sense of how we could make a small change that would have an impact on the transport corridors.
Thank you, Mary, for the very valuable comments and concrete example in the transport sector from East Africa. Can we hear from Mfon? Mfon, I think you're from West Africa. Maybe you can introduce quickly your background and where the region you come from. Thank you.
Right. I am Fon Usoro. I come from Nigeria and represent the Western Central African region. Currently, I am the Secretary General of the Memorandum of Understanding on Post-it Control for Western Central Africa. Though I'm rounding up with that assignment after 8 years by November. My area of specialty is transport law. I'm primarily a lawyer, so I'll be back to my law practice after November. And I am one of the founding members of ANWIN. My comments are in twofold. Sunita and Zena, thank you very much for your presentation. You've gone through the entire gamut of what we are about. And I noted the comments of the director with respect to the responses. Now, that is not a surprise because it is easy. For member states to sign up to a document, but not focus on the actual implementation. That is why we are very pleased that at the level of the AU, the matter of involvement of women in infrastructure and generally the implementation of the SDG goals with respect to female empowerment has now been prioritized by the African Union Commission. I do believe, and I think it's a common, commonly held opinion, that member states look up to the African Union to enforce the implementation of the involvement of women in infrastructure. The new system that has been developed for screening, it is up to the African Union to show member states that we just didn't develop documents for the sake of developing documents that indeed has to be taken seriously. And to that regard, if member states have submitted bids for PDAPOP 2 projects, I believe if the African Union puts their foot down and let them know that they have not complied with the new criteria, then the member states will be required to resubmit their proposals, which will be in compliance. I think that positive step by African Union will go a long way to assist member states wake up to their responsibilities with respect to Agenda 2023. Also, going back to one of the slides that Sunita showed, which listed the screening criteria and the scores. On the right, we saw 111. I recall there was a meeting that we had, still a PIDA, EU PIDA meeting, on the scoring of that very important criteria, being the involvement of women, both in the supply and on the demand side, that is being user, and on the supply chain being part of those that will design the project. I'm not sure whether the indication 111 was just to fill in the gap, or if indeed that was what was agreed finally after that meeting, because it is a disincentive for a member state that represents that they have taken one of the screening options into consideration to be scored one, and another member state who has taken four, which shows greater commitment to female empowerment, to score one. In fact, the design of those scores, in short, just tells everybody, don't bother about it. What is one score in relation to the totality of scores for my project? So again, the leadership and the seriousness towards the implementation or it being in the psyche of member states lies on the African Union, starting from that process of proposals for projects and also on the bidding. As an example, it will be easier for member states. And then we, on the other hand, we will engage with the government agencies that are responsible and point to the African Union as an example of leading in the implementation of these guidelines and the policy. I think the policy document is very comprehensive. It is comprehensive in the sense that it has catered to us women being users of infrastructure and consideration of involving women on the supply side when infrastructure projects are concerned. African Union is strengthening the provisions that will ensure compliance. I think I will stop here at this time. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. And I don't know whether the commissioner is still here. We appreciated a motivating opening. Thank you.
Thank you, Mfon. Maybe I don't know whether she's still here. We can check. But to come back to the scores, I think that was a slight. Maybe I'll project it again. I think it was a. Can you see it?
Yes, we can see it.
Okay. I think there was this. I've corrected it. I think that was a mistake. Actually, it should read actually 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. So I corrected it. So if the project scores between 0 and 1, the score is 1. Between 2 actions, it scores 2. 3 actions, okay. Scores 3.
That's better.
Yeah. So I corrected
Excellent.
It. So That's the correct good. Slide now okay. will be showed in the
Secondary.
Posted on the web. So this is that explains the confusion. You're right, but. To come back to the comments of Director Beda, yes, it's true that member states had difficulties to imagine or to propose these actions, but some of them were, I must say one thing, actually, one slight comment. Many of the projects, the way we treated them, actually, we analyzed the scores, and what we realized, it depended on which region, because some of the RECs, like SADC or ECOWAS, already have a policy document on gender procurement. And member states tended to align to what the REC recommended as gender actions. So in many cases, like projects from the West Africa, for example, could systematically score 2 or 3 because the REC already had a kind of an overarching policy for its member states on gender procurement actions, actually. And in some cases in Southern Africa, we even heard about the need for thresholds beyond the recommendations. They were even talking now in terms of thresholds, minimum thresholds for participation of women contractors and people and gender balance in infrastructure. So I think that is set, but the guidelines, as Sunita explained, the guidelines are there precisely to help. This is not the end of the process. These actions are intended actions at very early stages. But as Director Beda said, we will now get next year into the implementation phase with AUDA NEPA. And this is where actually the whole work starts with the help of the guidelines and the studies, the detailed ENS. I know many DFIs, for example, have a very detailed, even gender studies actually. Feasibility studies that need to document and demonstrate how the project will be gender balanced and gender sensitive. So I think a lot of work remains to be done even after the project is selected, and the guidelines, the 2 guidelines will definitely assist member states and project implementers to do this. So I think that clears this point and
maybe so, Krishna, if I can,
yeah, please,
if I can just add a clarification, and apologies, Doha, I see your hand is raised, but I just wanted to add a clarification for the audience on the screening criteria methodology, and thank you, Krishna, for correcting that table. But on top of that, I am happy to report that out of the 6 criteria of this integrated corridor approach, gender is one of the one of those criteria which has the highest scoring. So it is scored at 10%, and while the others are less than that. So just to show that it actually has a, even the, in the big picture, the weight that it carries is even quite high. So just wanted to clarify and help the understanding.
Yeah, thank you for these clarifications, Sunita. So Duha, you have hands raised, maybe we listen to you and then we can maybe filter through the chat, actually, if there are any questions in the chat. I will take some points in the chat later. Over to you, Duha.
Thanks a lot. Can you hear me?
I can't hear you very well, Duha.
Okay, perfect.
No, we hear you very, very, very low. Can you speak closer to the mic, please?
Duha? Is that better?
Yeah, now better. Yeah, go on.
Okay, perfect. Sorry about that. Thank you so much for attending. Madam Commissioner, thank you for taking the time. And when founding members, thank you for your presence and your engagement in the webinar. My name is Duha Jarabi. I'm the coordinator for the African Network for Minute Infrastructure. Before going into the questions in the chat, I actually wanted to give the floor, invite Manuel and Sarah from the AMSD team to speak a little bit about the policy brief and their contribution to it. They've been there from the genesis of the document, and they would like to highlight a little bit to the further ways it can be disseminated. Manuel, please go ahead. Manuel, are you here?
Manuel, you are muted. Please unmute.
I should be unmuted. You can hear me now?
Now it's
perfect.
Fine.
Yeah, we can perfect. Hear you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Duha, for this opportunity. And hello and a very warm welcome also from my side. Madam Commissioner, UNWIN founding members, Sunita, Zainab. It's not so much a question really as a very warm thank you for bringing together these two very important products. So let me just introduce myself. My name is Manuel Holtmann. I work for a global program of GIZ called the Emerging Market Sustainability Dialogues, together with my colleague Sarah, who's also with us today. And we've been working for the last years to pilot and scale up innovative solutions for sustainable infrastructure development in and with emerging market economies in particular. And what we've been focusing on, or one of the things we've been focusing rather, is to support various presidencies of the Think 20 engagement group of the G20, including to shift the global policy debate from the need to simply invest into more infrastructure to the need to invest in sustainable infrastructure, including with the gender dimension. And two things from our work are very clear to us in that regard. And the first one is infrastructure is absolutely not sustainable unless it is gender responsive. That is, unless it serves the specific needs of women and girls. And gender, this has come out very clearly also in the intervention by Madam Commissioner, is not a nice to have, but is absolutely essential to reach, to meet the global goals. And secondly, true progress on those goals defined in Africa's Agenda 2063, but also in the SDG, will not be achieved unless we address sustainability. If we only address sustainability considerations, one project at a time. Instead, what we need is both. We need meaningful sustainability criteria, including on gender, at the project level, but also need policy change for an enabling environment that is conducive to transformative change. And that is why I think it's a really great step forward in the right direction that we have both these documents that complement each other. First, the grid guidelines at the project level, and also the policy brief on gender responsive infrastructure. And we've been extremely blessed to be a part of this process from the very beginning, and to have worked with both Sunita and Zainab as part of the Solutions Lab Scaling for Sustainable Infrastructure that we've been setting up as GIZ together with the Global Solutions Initiative. Got to know both of them as very competent, and I think this came out very clearly today, and passionate advocates for women empowerment through sustainable infrastructure. So just looking forward, we hope that these two documents will be taken up by the RECs, by the member state, and by the PETA stakeholders. And we're very committed to stay a part of this journey, including to making these documents, especially the policy brief, available to a broader international policy audience. And there are different venues that we have in mind for this, including the so-called Global Solutions Summit that has been initiated under the German G20 presidency in order to bring policy-based, fact-based, research, evidence-based policy recommendations to the global policy fora. I will stop here. I think this was a very fantastic presentation with lots of detail and concrete actionable recommendations. So thank you very much, Zunita, Zeynep, and the team around you. I'll stop here. Thank you.
Thank you, Manuel. Maybe Sarah, I think, wants to intervene. Is she connected? If she's...
No, I think Manuel was had the only intervention planned. Sarah's just here to witness the presentation.
Okay. Any other questions before we move to the chat? If no, maybe I noted actually a comment in the chat asking whether it should be translated. So as I said earlier, unfortunately, I think our resource persons are essentially English speaking, but both me and Duha, we are French, we speak French. So if si vous avez des questions en français, ou des choses que vous n'avez pas compris, n'hésitez pas à poser des questions, poser vos questions en français, on pourra essayer de traduire. Donc, désolé pour, en fait, ne pas, on n'a pas pu organiser, normalement pour ce genre de séminaire, on n'a pas de traduction simultanée, mais dans certains cas, on avait organisé des séminaires dédiés. Quand nos intervenants sont bilingues, on peut organiser deux sessions. Mais dans ce cas, comme je vous ai dit, nos intervenants sont essentiellement anglophones, donc on essaye de traduire un peu. Mais je suis sûr qu'il y a des membres, par exemple, même les founding members, certains sont francophones, donc on va essayer de répondre à vos questions si vous avez des questions en français. Deuxièmement, je vois un commentaire intéressant de, je ne sais pas si elle est toujours connectée, il y a une personne de... Africa Women in Energy and Power. There's somebody from Beta. Are you still connected, Beta? Africa Women in Energy and Power. If you're still connected, maybe it would be nice, interesting to hear from you because you typed some comments in the chat box that I see very interesting. If you could say a few words. Maybe
she's no longer here, unfortunately, but I have noted her name and organization down and will absolutely
get in touch with her. Yeah, definitely. I think this is very interesting. This is probably part of our broader network we're trying to build, beneficiary network. I don't see any other questions in chat, so maybe we switch over to the live questions. Anybody wants to intervene, ask a question, make a comment. Si vous voulez intervenir pour une question ou un commentaire, allez-y. Vous pouvez lever la main ou simplement poser votre question.
Krishna, juste pour clarifier, on est prêt, c'est moi, Sunita ici, on est prêt pour répondre en français nous-mêmes. على ممتى حتى نتكلم اللغة العربية ومستعدين نتحدث باللغة العربية. مرسي.
That's great. So we have a very language proficient team, French and Arabic. So members, colleagues, any questions you would like to raise with the consultants and with the UNWIN founding members, or share some experience, comments? Yes, we have a hands raised from Binani. Please, yes. Go on.
Thank you everyone for the good presentations. It's really very wonderful to attend this kind of meeting. I'm speaking on behalf of East African Community Secretariat, and specifically on behalf of my two directors. I mean, director in charge of social sectors and the director in charge of infrastructure. The latter is now participating in Tanzania national elections, and my director is in another meeting. So I really followed very well all presentations, and I wish to raise this question as someone from REC. East African Community is a regional economic community like others, wish to know. I'm the one who wish to know as a gender officer, principal gender and community development officer. What is the role of REC in all this? We are there to, as a REC, we coordinate the implementation of any program, any project at national level. Our coordination is an overall coordination because we have a ministry in charge of EAC affairs in each partner state. We call them partner states, not member state, not member states or member countries, whatever. So as we are coordinating, we can coordinate. We need to know if a project is selected within PIDA, whose responsibility, first of all? Is it directly a selection for a country, or it is at REC level to select according to the needs of its population or its citizens, because we have in many directorates, our disaggregated data, we have our need, we know our women's need. So if we go for partner states, what will be the influence of REC in all that for a good implementation or successful implementation? I raise this question because in many meetings organized by AU or even UN, if I can be clear, we always be involved as RECs, but at the end of the day, when it comes for implementation, as implementation is done at partner states level, we don't see how we can monitor or how we can do monitoring or evaluate the project, because it may be difficult, very tricky, because the EU will liaise with a particular partner state, and the partner state or a country go straight, report to EU, and fail to report to the REC. I suggest, in my point of view or my humble submission, AUC should most engage with RECs this time so that we can go together. Because the same partner state belongs to a certain REC. And for the REC, it is very important and to harmonize the work done at a national level. For instance, EAC has six partner states, namely Burundi, Rwanda, Uganda, United Republic of Tanzania, Kenya, and the Republic of South Sudan. When it's time to set to develop a policy or to do a framework on a certain policy, we gather all these experts in the area. That's for this particular area we are talking about. We may gather all experts in infrastructure and the gender experts together, and we prioritize not a particular country, because that can take somehow a lot of time, because and also some partner states may fail to be consistent in reporting to AUC, but when it's REC to coordinate or organize relevant meetings to do a harmonized work, that can be done. But on our side. I'm not saying that we cannot coordinate well, but when a coordination is responsibilized to a rec, we can do it. But when a country member knows that I am responsible of this, I have to report to AU, they just ignore or fail to go for a rec because maybe there is no money from the other side. The money was provided by AU directly. So I just want to know what can be the role of REC in all this so that we can move together. And some countries can be even forgotten. But for REC, we just gather all countries which are belonging to the REC. No one is lagging behind. We move together. But when it's a particular country, liaise with the AU, some countries can be forgotten or can even forget to do ABC because of lack of interest or many other reasons. So I'm just from the beginning try to understand this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for this very important question. Maybe if any members want to intervene, otherwise I may start and then you can complement, if you allow. So maybe first to clarify the process, I think two things are important. First, in PIDA part two, in the second phase of PIDA, we made it very, very clear while we did our trainings. We did some face-to-face trainings and then we did 24 webinars. And it was very clear that we were looking for two things. First of all, ownership by partner states. We wanted to ensure that whenever projects are submitted for in PIDA Part 2, there's full ownership by the country, by the member state, by the partner state, as you call them. But also, there's full validation by the REC. Why? Because PIDA concerns cross-border projects. PIDA is not about national projects. It's about projects across borders, regional projects, and continental projects. So to ensure the regional dimension, we either requested that the project is referenced in the REC master plan, or if it's not the case, that there is a clear MOU agreement between the two, between the member countries that initiated the project. So I think that clarifies the role of the partner states and the RECs. Both need to be closely involved. And the source actually of the project is really we made it sure each REC had their own methodology, but the process has always been get assurance, get clarity on ownership, make sure that this is not only ownership but priority. Is this project still a priority for the member states? If yes, then it's considered, then it's validated by the REC. And then there's a further validation, further screening down the line to really qualify, justify that this project is in fact a regional project. And just for your information, a very small fraction, actually 12 projects out of 242 submitted, didn't meet the regional criteria because they were purely national projects. So you're right that there's a need, but this is happening. I think you should be rest assured that this coordination has been done in the PIDA Part 2. But then the other important point is the actual implementation, the commitment to raise funds, the sovereign resources that are mobilized are always by the countries and by the participating countries. So I think this is where also the countries, because of this close need for projects to be in master plans, the RECs would also be very closely involved because it is their master plan which is being also implemented. I'll stop here. Maybe if other colleagues, Sunita or Anwin members want to intervene or anybody else want to contribute, please feel free. If not, Sunita, you want to, your mic is unmuted, you want to intervene?
Yes. No. Yes, maybe I can just help to add to what Krishna has said already. I think as Krishna mentioned, there has been a very long consultation process, not only on this gender sort of policy guidelines or the grid guidelines, but since all of last year, there have been several consultations. And I think from that perspective, from the East African community, it was actually a very good contribution. We have met in Kigali, we have met in Malabo. So I think in that sense, for us in UNWIN, we have the UNWIN members who are present as well. So we are happy to, I mean, the UNWIN members can also help clarify any gender issues in the process as needed. Thank you.
La question de sécurité et de crise politique.
Krishna, you're muted, but we can't hear the new speaker.
No. Sorry, I was muted. Yeah. No, actually, somebody is talking, but I don't think it's a question. Bolande, do you have a question?
No.
No, I did too. Okay. Oh. Somebody is sharing his screen. Bolande, je crois.
Maybe Krishna, as you are the host, you can stop the screen share.
Yeah,
function.
Yeah. I'll try this. No, actually, I can't stop him. But Monsieur Bolande, s'il vous plaît. Bon.
Sorry, anyway. I did not mean to talk. It was a mistake.
Sorry. Okay. No worries. Okay.
Krishna, there's a question for you on the chat.
Yeah. Let's look at the question. Can I, maybe you can some the person who asked, if he's still there, please ask your question live. I can't see the question yet.
Okay, so I'm asking. So I just want to know, what is the next step towards the gender mainstreaming policy and the grid, having finalized it between Sonita's group and GIZ? What is the next step?
Yes, I saw the question. Yeah, sorry. I think the next step is simply this will be discussed at the level of the steering committee, which is happening in November. So the steering committee will meet and then will validate these two guidelines, and from there we will move on. Yeah, I think that's the next step. Yeah. And from
that, just wanted to know when we can start sharing it with our the relevant agencies. So we'll have to wait until after November.
I suggest let's wait for the steering committee so that then it's formally approved, and then we can start doing the communications, sharing, and all that. Yeah. I think it would be best, yeah. Okay, so let me look at the chat again. There's a question about people who joined late, pour les collègues qui ont rejoint en cours de route, la présentation et l'enregistrement seront postés sur le site à partir de demain matin, ce soir même. Et donc vous pourrez écouter si vous avez manquer la première partie, vous pourrez écouter l'enregistrement. Okay, so Duha, do you see any other questions in the chat, or anybody wants to intervene with questions or clarifications?
And I don't see any raised hands. If you have any questions, please feel free to intervene live or leave them in the chat box. So far, there are none.
Okay. So maybe the other UNWIN members, do you want to share some experience or, you know, some views about maybe your region where you come from and gender issues there.
Sorry, Krishna, before we move on to that, we have a question from Minani. She wants to know if it would be better, wouldn't it be better to liaise with gender experts rec by rec to ensure that we consider women's needs in their locations?
Yes, actually, as I said, the steering committee, the high-level steering committee includes actually one of the formal members of the steering committee is actually the gender expert nominated by the REC. So we will you will soon be contacted by the AUC. You will receive a formal invitation to send your gender expert to represent the REC on this committee. So, and then you can bring on board, you know, the specific needs for these regions can be taken into consideration there. But we also, as I said earlier, some RECs have their own gender policies, which tend to already support the procurement actions and demand side actions. So, which is good. But then maybe you're right, there could be an opportunity for cross-learning actually, for RECs to learn from what the experiences of other RECs, what they're doing, and sharing experiences from East Africa to West Africa, North to South, etc. Definitely, that's a good platform. The ANWIN steering committee is actually a good advocacy lobby policy platform for sharing these kinds of experiences and influencing decision makers on the continent. Yeah. I see a very long comment, I think. Somebody has Ayla Shekala. Yeah. Maybe can we, there's a long comment from Ayla. If you're still there, maybe you can talk live. But we're reading the comment now. Okay. So we take on board the comment. Thank you. The suggestion, actually. Okay, thank you. It's a suggestion in the chat box, yeah. Okay, so any other remarks, contributions you want to make, suggestions? Akoda, you want to intervene? You're muted, Akoda. We can hear you talking. We can see you. We can't hear you. Please unmute. I see we have Chris Apia or Olumuyiwa from ECOWAS. Maybe Chris, would you like to share maybe something about the gender policies in ECOWAS? That would be interesting. I recall you had some quite advanced gender policies already identified, Chris.
Krishna, I think he's muted.
No, I think, maybe he's not hearing us. Chris, you're muted now. Yes. Please go, Chris, yeah.
No, thanks, Krishna. We've been part of the discussion of the criteria and shortlisting for the projects for the PIDAPAP 2, right from the beginning. And As was mentioned by Sunita, the gender criterion was approved in Addis when we met, the RECs met with AU to carry the 10 marks, which I think communicates the commitment that we all have to ensure that this runs through our project prioritization. Unfortunately, my gender colleagues could not participate. They would have given an overview on the our agenda, regional agenda policy, which I'm not sure if Sunita and the team have a copy. We can share a copy with you. It's pretty detailed. It addresses all the various subsectors in the infrastructure sector, even though not detailed, but at the policy level, it gives a clear indication of where we want things to be in terms of addressing the gender mainstreaming issue. I must also commend the team. In fact, this is a very good improvement over the earlier text we had seen, even when we're discussing this at the AU level. Addressing the issues we're speaking about, that, look, let's disaggregate this issue of gender mainstreaming at the project level. And I like the fact that they have given clear indications as to how the subject will be tackled right through the project cycle. So at identification, preparation, even financial structuring and all that, these are the specifics that we want to take. Now, when they started the presentation, I quickly opened the terms of reference we are using to design the 1,000+ kilometers Abidjan-Lagos corridor. As you all know, this is a flagship of the PIDA. And I looked at the sections that seek to address the issue of gender. And I realized that to a large extent, at the project level, luckily for us, because we have been part of this, we had quickly, smuggled into the document all these very specific requirements for the consultants to disaggregate data collection and analysis to respond or give responses to the general gender situation in designing the project. So hopefully we are the draft or preliminary design stage now, feasibility and preliminary design stage. So hopefully by the time we get to the validation, we would invite the colleagues working on this to also have a look if our project level response is adequate as per the marking scheme. Let me put it like that: the marking scheme that they have at the AU level. Also, it will also serve as a practical example of how we can practicalize some of these theoretical things we are talking about. I mean, the best level to see how operational this can be is at the project level. So when you see how it's being done in the area of collecting data, socioeconomic data from the populations along the corridor, the traders who go on it, and how we are infusing that in the analysis of the feasibility of these projects, then you'll be seeing how the impact of these, theoretical policies are having down there at the corridor level. So that's what we are doing. For the policies, I'll share a copy with the team so that they can give any thoughts they have as we move forward. If it needs to be relooked at, I mean, it's been around for, I think, since 2017. So there's likely to be a midterm evaluation of it, and then we can take on board some of the new things coming up from this very good assignment that you're undertaking. So we are fully on board. We are fully on board this. We work with you at the project level. As our colleague from EAC said, I mean, the RECs are the building blocks for the AUC. So everything will have to come through us, and we will ensure that the member states are coordinated in such a way that we don't leave anything around, anybody behind. I like that point she made, that if you go country by country, some countries will do very well, and some would also, I like as she put it, will forget. But once it's at a rec level, then we ensure that all our member states are brought on board. And these corridors that cast through several member states are also used to advance the objectives that we seek to achieve. Thank you, Krishna. Thanks, Sunita and the team. Very well done.
Thank you, Chris. I think we must also maybe congratulate ECOWAS. Actually, they were very, very helpful or very, very efficient in mobilizing their member states, and they played a very central role. Actually, ECOWAS is probably had the most centralized submission of projects, where they handled all the liaison with member states, and they validated the projects at the central level. So that shows very strong. They also ensured very strong country ownership from the member states before submitting. So I think Hemphon, you have hands raised. You want to intervene, Hemphon?
Thank you very much, Krishna. My heart gladdens hearing the delegates from ECOWAS. That is very, very assuring. The example he has given us, the project, the Abidjan Lagos project. And as he was speaking, I just said, this is a gentleman who has very powerful women in his life and respects empowerment of women. So we do not need to convince him as we convince other men in the position of authority. So I like the fact that he has said they will monitor to see whether that criteria which had been included in that particular project has been adhered to. Because it's one thing to have included it, it's another thing to enforce the implementation or the compliance by contractors. So we would like to follow up and see how that goes. What I would like to suggest to ECOWAS and indeed other RECs is to follow the example of the AUC by setting out a meeting on the gender responsive criteria, inviting all the critical stakeholders, including the civil society organizations who act as watchdogs. And that will really be nice. It will also show that they have put it on the front burner. They've prioritized the issue of female involvement of women in infrastructure. I'm the first lady that was privileged to be the head of the West and Central Africa Memorandum on Post-it Control, and I have not been invited to any such gender-focused meeting by ECOWAS. I'm not talking about security. Those ones we have been there have been invited, but on gender issues. So please, our rep from ECOWAS, it would be nice if that is as the AU is the way. And I will also say this with respect to some of the comments that or information that Krishna has given us, informing us that some RECs do have gender policies. Yes, some do, most do actually, and several countries have, including Nigeria. But it's our concern would be how serious the RECs and the member states have been in implementing the gender policies that they have developed. That is again what the leadership from the AUC comes in. So we appreciate that there are those policies, but the implementation and the compliance and monitoring are the areas that we are very concerned with. And finally, ANWIN fully supports and adopts the document that has been presented today by.
Okay, thank you, Hemphon. Any other comments, questions in the chat? Yeah, as you can see, Chris has posted on the chat box the specific sections of the TOR. That's very helpful. Thank you, Chris. Any other questions?
Krishna, there's a couple of comments in the chat box.
Duha, we can't hear you well. Please speak in the mic.
My headphones are not so good. I was just saying there are no questions per se, but there's a couple of suggestions or comments rather in the chat box from Chris from McCullough and from Minani.
Okay. So we will look at them, take them on board. I can say that EAC has a regional policy document, which is the main document for gender mainstreaming in EAC organs and institutions. Thank you. If you could share a copy with us, then maybe we can circulate it. We can post it on the website together with the other documents, with the presentations for today. That would be also helpful. Thank you. So if we have reached the time allocated for the webinar, we started 5 minutes late. So we are towards the end. So if there are maybe some concluding remarks from ANWIN members, from Sunita, Zainab, or Rex, or anybody, please let us please go on. Maybe Sunita.
No, Krishna, if I may, just
please.
A follow up on the just to confirm from you if you still have the copies of our agenda policy that I sent for the shortlisting, so you can share with colleagues.
We have it, but okay. It would be nice. I mean, if it hasn't changed since 2017, yes, we have the one you sent earlier. But mm-hmm. In case there are any changes, please just resend it to us so that we are sure we have the latest version, please.
Okay, all right. Then also, in response to Dr. Osoro's comments, I've sent you my email. Please send me a mail, then we will discuss the possibility of the regional workshop on gender mainstreaming and issues surrounding infrastructure and gender. We can have a discussion around that. I'll also connect you to our social and gender desk. I'm surprised they've not been inviting you. Maybe they are not aware of your office. So I will connect you to them, then you can also take it up with them. Thank you, Krishna.
Sorry, I was muted. Thank you, Chris. Maybe some last words from Sunita, Zainab, and ANWIN members before we close if there are no other further questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Krishna. I don't have much to add. I just wanted to thank the African Union, the ALDA NEPAD, and all the participants for giving us, Dr. Zainab, our colleague Donia Leibrand, and myself the opportunity to present this important work, and it was really, really a great pleasure to hear that so much progress that has been made from ECOWAS, from the East African community. And as I mentioned in my presentation in the beginning, this is just a short snapshot. There's a lot to be done, and we, in our capacity as savannas, will be happy to help as well as much as needed. So. Thank you all, and thank you to the ANWIN members for supporting our work. Thank you.
Thank you, Sunita. Maybe Zainab, you want to say a few words?
Yeah, thanks, Krishna. No, really not much, just to thank everybody. And again, really thank the ANWIN members, I mean, and also to support them. We have a lot of work ahead of them. So as the French say, courage. Thanks.
Thank you. Mfon, you want to say a few words on behalf of ANWIN, your colleagues? Uh,
Okay, so I was struggling to unmute. Yes, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity. As you can see, the membership of ANWIN represents all the region in Africa, and we have members in the private sector. We have members who are in the civil society space, and members that are very, very involved and interested in infrastructure and ensuring that we create a bigger space for the participation of competent and capable women. We have worked very well with Savannah's and the commissioner, and we are pleased that the work has come up to this level. We are also happy that the RECs are very supportive of this AUC's initiative. And we definitely look forward to all the member states adopting those documents, and then together mapping out a methodology for ensuring implementation in the integrated corridor approach. So yes, I thank everybody for attending, and I thank all of you, and look forward to meeting you again at the next meeting, the steering committee meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mfon. If there are no other further comments from anybody, I think we should close here. I would like to thank you all for your participation and very active participation indeed. And sorry about, our colleagues, French-speaking colleagues, maybe I'll say a few words in French just for them. Donc, merci à tout le monde. En fait, désolé pour les collègues francophones. En fait, on n'a pas pu traduire, comme j'ai dit. Mais si vous avez des questions, n'hésitez pas à nous contacter. Nous sommes en contact permanent et on pourra à ce moment-là intervenir de façon ponctuelle sur vos questions, clarifications et peut-être traduire certains documents dans l'avenir qui seront utiles. Donc, de toute façon, les guidelines, je peux vous rassurer que tout ce qui est documents qui ont été présentés aujourd'hui, tout ce qui est guidelines, policy, etc., vont être traduits, au moins en français, et d'ailleurs dans les quatre langues de l'Union africaine, et seront éventuellement disponibles, postés sur le site. OK. So, Mary, you want to say something? You?
No, I thought we were saying goodbye, so I just wrote the camera said goodbye.
Properly. Okay.
Thank you so much for a great session.
Thank you. So, thank you, everybody. So, it's nice. So, we'll meet soon. And then, thank you for the good work you're doing, all the efforts you're doing for gender for Africa. And then let's hope, as colleague said, let's hope we can bring it to practicality, to the real projects, and make things move. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.